What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today. In the final week of the Major League Baseball regular season, I don't know how we got here, but felt like we were talking about spring training and the offseason and opening day just yesterday. But finally, postseason baseball is on the horizon. And it's exciting, man, because I have a feeling going into Red October this year, pretty much the exact opposite of what I was feeling at this time last year. It was 3 months of pretty ugly baseball, pretty mediocre baseball, I should say, for the Phillies after the London series, essentially. And as the postseason kept creeping up and they clearly were not playing their best baseball, you had that feeling that, you know, sure, this is a 95-win team and there's a lot of talent on the roster and that they could easily go on and make a run here and, you know, be like the 2023 Texas Rangers and not have a great finish to the season, but still manage to, you know, get to the World Series and win it. It's a lot different this year. I feel this year that they're finally going into the postseason for the first time, playing their best baseball. And I know that they had a three-game skid last week in Arizona and then coming back home and, you know, losing that first game to the Marlins on Tuesday. But I have a feeling with this team this year that I did not last year, and that is that they are playing good baseball going into the postseason. A lot of people were worrying earlier this week, but last year was 3 months of mediocre baseball as opposed to just a couple games here. And like the Phillies have done pretty much all year, they find a way to, you know, end a little cold streak by just absolutely going off offensively in a game where they hit 8 home runs, a franchise record the other night. They get a great pitching performance, you know, last night from Walker Buehler and Taijuan Walker. So the Phillies have found ways to respond all year in terms of when they're not playing their best, being able to turn it around quick, and then you know, just playing good baseball. So good feeling heading into the postseason this year, unlike last year. And they have clinched their first round bye officially, which means that they will not be playing the wild card series, which I will always argue is very important because I know that in the past teams have said, look, we, you know, don't want to get cold. We don't want to necessarily have that week off to get our players out of rhythm. But you never know what can happen in a best of three series. And playing in a wild card series, especially this year, when, you know, I know the Mets, the Reds, and the Diamondbacks aren't great, the greatest, and we'll get into all the scenarios later in the pod. But still, you can, you know, get out-dueled pitching-wise for two games, and that's it. That's the end of your season. So I know the Phillies are better than those teams, but still, really good feeling to know that they will have that first round bye and that they will have home field advantage in the National League Division Series. So important stuff there. Glad they were able to wrap that up. And this weekend is pretty much just going to be, you know, not the most meaningful games in the world unless the Brewers get swept and the Phillies would sweep the Minnesota Twins. So if two sweeps happen, the Phillies would get the one seed, but unless that occurs, the Phillies are locked into the two seed. And that is just, for the sake of the pod, what I am assuming is going to happen. If it changes, hey, that would be awesome, but not expecting that scenario to play out this weekend for sure. So want to get in the lineup, want to get in the starting pitching, want to get into the bullpen as the postseason approaches. I'll give you my lineup that I think should be out there game one against, you know, whoever they're facing. Obviously, it's righty-lefty dependent a little bit, but want to get into that right here. So good news on Trey Turner. First of all, Trey Turner, you know, Dave Dombrowski came on the WIP afternoon show yesterday, said that Trey is fully expected to be ready to go for the division series. Probably could have came back this weekend if they had to, but they're going to lay off. And Trey said he feels good with his swings. He feels good fielding the baseball. He just is at a point right now where he wants to make sure that his speed on the base pass, he feels comfortable with running on the base pass. Because if you remember his hamstring injury last year, which clearly was much more severe than this and left him out, what, almost like 2 months? When he came back, he was clearly nervous running the bases, and it was something where he didn't want to test the hamstring too much because I guess he was scared of tweaking it, and you never know when you're coming back from a soft tissue injury like that if, you know, you can re-injure something. So I think that's where that sort of timidness on the base pass sort of came from Trey last year, and he said that that experience has been good for him, and it's something that this year he's going to use his experience to be able to know when to push it, know when not to push it. So I'm hoping that he is able to be effective on the base pass like he has all year, because that's been a reason why he's been so effective out of the leadoff spot, and being able to take bases and, you know, set Bader up, set Schwarber up, set Harper up for opportunities to hit with runners in scoring position is essential. So good news that Trey is going to be back for the postseason, and for a guy who's, you know, I think is going to still be qualified to win the batting title, that's a guy you need in your lineup for the postseason. So when that injury happened down in Miami, it was scary, but it looks like we are going to get hopefully the Trey Turner back that we've had all season long. So my lineup for the postseason, I'm going to run through it real quick. I just brought up Trey because I'm leading him off, of course. I'm going to go Trey, Bader in center, Harper at first, Schwarber DH, JT behind the plate, Martian left, Bohm, Casty, Kepler platoon in right, and Stott and maybe Sosa platoon at second base. So that's my lineup right there. Trey, Bader, Harper, Schwarber, JT, Marsh, Bohm, Casty slash Kepler, Stott slash Sosa. And I think hitting Bader at the top of that lineup and what he's been able to do with Trey out is just absolutely massive for this team to be able to stretch the lineup out and be able to, you know, make it a little more top heavy, because I think the depth of the Phillies lineup has been what's made them successful, you know, hitting the baseball this year, because they've gotten a ton of contributions from guys like Brandon Marsh, who it goes under talked about, but Brandon Marsh, who hit literally 0 for April, I think his average at the end of the month was 0.95. He's hitting 281 now, and it's one of the most impressive turnarounds from a bad beginning of the season that I think we've ever seen. Like, for him to be able to have that month and then be able to go down to AAA, I know they said he had the hamstring injury, but I felt like he just needed more of a reset than anything, and he was able to get that down there clearly. For him to be able to have the stretch that he's had from May to now, which is essentially a full season of baseball, just really impressive. And I think he's totally earned the opportunity to be able to start every game, even against lefties, and I think that's what they're going to do in the postseason. Like, I know that either Weston Wilson or Otto Kemp will be on the postseason roster, and that they could be a platoon option against the lefty. And I think that Weston Wilson and Otto have both had some moments this year. Granted, Otto probably isn't as much of an option in left field as, you know, Otto Kemp would be. So you'd probably lean towards putting Weston Wilson on the roster over Otto, even though I like Otto's bat a little more. But to me, I think Marsh has earned that opportunity to be able to play in all of these postseason games, especially with the defense he provides out in left field. While he was a solid center fielder, I guess, maybe just around an average center fielder, he is a Gold Glove caliber guy in left. And late in games, if you go him in left, Bader in center, Kepler in right, that's a really good defensive outfield, and one you can feel comfortable with out there with the lead. So that, I think, would be my lineup going into the postseason. I talked about the platoon thing, and that's still being an option as the postseason goes on, which leads me into the Nick Castellanos situation, because I didn't get to talk about it last week. It happened last Friday night after I recorded the pod. So if in case you missed it, I'm sure you didn't. Real quick, Nick Castellanos, after the Phillies beat the Arizona Diamondbacks last Friday night, he did a post-game interview with Ruben Amaro and Scott Fransky, and it was a little awkward. It was a little tense. Like, they asked him about his new role and being a platoon guy for the first time in his career and just trying to help the team in any way he can. And in, you know, typical Nick fashion, he was very blunt and very honest with what he thought of the situation. And he said, it's something I'm still getting used to. You know, I've never done this in my life, let alone my professional career. And it's just something that I don't necessarily love, but I'm just going to have to do it. And John Middleton pays me to go try to win a World Series for the Phillies, and that's what I'm going to do. So I like that end part there, but then he gets into the clubhouse and is met by a media scrum who, granted, I think this is a big part of this entire situation here. He hadn't spoke to the media since, like, early August, and this situation has been going on for, you know, over a month now, and they clearly were going to ask him questions about it when he got in there, because he had a big home run, he had his 250th, and then he essentially, you know, in this role, is asked for the first time, you know, how are you feeling about this? Is this something that you're comfortable with? Is this something you're okay with? And then where I think it maybe got a little unfair was him discuss, or the reporter was asking him, you know, what about next year? What are your thoughts on that? And he basically shut that down really quick and said, why would you ask me something like that? It was very tense all around. It was something where he clearly was not in a situation where he wanted to say anything that he didn't believe. And he said that, you know, I get it from my father, who has always been very blunt and honest with me. And the thing I had an issue with most was him saying that Rob Thompson isn't a good communicator, because from anyone else that has spoken to the media since Rob has taken over in 2022. He is somebody who communication with his players is his strength. And I've never heard a single other person say that. So I understand that Nick Castellanos is upset. I understand that he wants to play every day. And I actually admire that because as a competitor, I totally get wanting to be out there every single day. And I can't say I've ever been in the position that Nick Castellanos has been in. But for a team that has so much good mojo going and a ton of good vibes right now heading into the postseason, it just felt like something that was unnecessary. And whether you want to blame him, whether you want to blame the reporters for pressing, I think the reporters were just doing their job there. And for a guy who hasn't spoken to them in over a month, those are answers that you have to get. So that's kind of my thoughts on the Castellanos situation. I thought it was rough. It was something that it wasn't a fun watch when you saw that interview. It was clearly something that was bothering him, and he let it all out there. And I still think he can contribute in the postseason because he's had so many big moments for them. And he's just struggled at points this year. And I don't think that he can really have an argument by saying that he deserves to play every single day right now, especially with how well the platoon has worked out and all the right buttons that Rob Thompson's pushed. So those are my thoughts on that. Want to move on to some more positive stuff here with the lineup. Mentioned Kyle Schwarber. I want him hitting behind Bryce Harper in the postseason so he has that protection, or so Bryce has that protection. And Kyle Schwarber, man, 56 home runs right now going into the last weekend of the season. Ryan Howard's record is on the table. The two homer night the other night, just absolutely electric stuff from Schwarber. And by the way, how about Edmundo Sosa before I get more to Kyle? Three homer night right off the IL. Just how can you not love Edmundo Sosa? And I loved the interview he did after the game. He spoke a little English for one of the first times and tried to do the interview in English partly, which I thought was cool. And him and Diego, of course, doing the interview with Tom McCarthy and Kruk after the game. So just can't, you know, nothing but love for the guy. He's truly somebody who's just happy to be here, happy to be on this team. And he would be a really, you know, fun guy to remember as part of a World Series team. So hopefully they get it done. And just back to Kyle Schwarber for a second, though. One of the best seasons we've seen a Philly have, I think, in my life. And I mentioned that Dave Dombrowski went on the WIP afternoon show yesterday. Spike asked him a question about just, you know, every time you see him pop a home run, is there just a, you know, a money cash register sound effect that plays off in your head? And Dave mentioned how he spoke to, I believe it's Jason Romano is his agent, and because he is the same agent as Walker Buehler, and they obviously spoke a ton right before he got signed. And he said to him, you know, that's enough. I get it. We understand that Kyle is, you know, wants to make a little bit of money this offseason, so he can relax with the homers a little bit, clearly saying that jokingly. But what a season in the free agency. One of the best free agent seasons you will ever see. And I just don't know how this guy goes anywhere, man. For what he means to this organization, what he means for this lineup, what he means for that clubhouse off the field, I don't see a scenario where they let him get away. And I don't see a team that will outbid for him, because I think he is somebody who he almost talks as if he is going to be a manager of this team one day. I know I've mentioned that once or twice before, but Kyle Schwarber is a guy that is just universally liked in that clubhouse and is liked by the fans, loved by the coaching staff, and I just don't know what this team would do without him. So I'm fully expecting him to be back next year. I think 4 or 5 years for, you know, almost $30 million a year is probably what it's going to end up taking. And I think John Middleton's going to end up paying that price, because I don't know what this lineup looks like exactly without Kyle Schwarber and without that power in the middle of the lineup there. I think he's essential to this ball club in every single facet. So would expect him to be back next year. But part of me, every time I watch, I'm like, man, Kate, I hope this isn't the last time that I'm watching him in a Phillies uniform here. So hopefully it's a big postseason. Hopefully he cashes in with the Phils this offseason, and we will go from there. But want to get into some rotation thoughts for the postseason before, you know, we get into the playoff scenarios and the weekend preview and everything like that. So my rotation for the postseason, as I would set it up right now, is still, as I've mentioned, you know, last week and a couple of other weeks prior, would be Chris Sanchez game one, Ranger game two, Lizardo game three for the DS. And you only have to throw three starters out there because you have an extra day of rest in the NLDS, so three starters, all you're going to need. You can throw Walker Buehler, you can throw, you know, Taijuan Walker, Nola, you can throw those guys in the bullpen, and or your choice of any of those guys in the bullpen. I probably would think it'd be Walker Buehler just because he's done it before, and I think he has the stuff to come out of the bullpen and has the postseason experience as well. But those would be my three guys right now. And I think there's an argument out there that Luzardo could be your number two starter. And I totally get that from a standpoint of him just being the better pitcher than Ranger right now. Ranger didn't have his best day against Arizona on Sunday. And I think that's partially due to, you know, the circumstances not being necessarily a big game scenario, because I think Ranger has to be pinpoint accurate, pinpoint perfect when he's throwing the baseball. And he typically steps up in those big moments and has that slow heartbeat. So I don't want to necessarily give him an excuse for why he got absolutely rocked out there in Arizona on Sunday, but that I just didn't think he was pinpoint with all of his pitches, and he was missing a little bit down the middle of the plate. And for a guy that doesn't have velocity, you're going to, you know, get burned on that. So I'm still going Sanchez, Ranger, Luzardo, just because Ranger gives you the change of pace in game two. Because if you're throwing three lefties out there, I don't think you can give the same look on back-to-back nights where you have Sanchez and Luzardo, who are power lefties. They're going to beat you with velocity. They're going to beat you, you know, slider down and in as well. But they just give you that similar look that I think a lineup seeing for the second time would probably be able to take advantage of. So I get the logic and reasoning behind that, and I think it's a luxury to have Ranger for that purpose, to where he gives you that different look and he's going to beat you with soft stuff and hitting the corners and being able to, you know, just sort of pitch to you in a different way. So I think that Ranger probably goes game two, and I feel really confident about Luzardo going in game three right now. I think that he is pitching some of the best baseball of the season right now, and if you, and I understand that you could do this probably with a lot of pitchers, but if you take out that two-game stretch where he gives up 20 runs in July, I mean, or in late June, early July, we're looking at a totally, you know, different season in terms of numbers, and I feel really confident about Luzardo heading into the postseason. I think that he's really had a good month of September, and he's excited to pitch in the postseason. Like, people forget that he pitched for the Marlins at Citizens Bank Park, the wild card series in 23, and he talks about that atmosphere and people not wanting to pitch at Citizens Bank Park. And I think that he's really amped up to be able to pitch in a postseason game in Red October. So excited for him. And if they get to the NLCS, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that number four spot, because Nola still don't feel super confident in them. And they've really done a good job with this piggyback thing with Walker Buehler and Taijuan Walker. They give up no earned runs last night. Walker Buehler, in what, three starts so far, has given up, I think he's given up one earned run. And a lot of that is, you know, some batted ball luck. And look, he gave us some hard hit balls last night and got lucky. But at the same time, he has a presence on the mound that I think in the postseason plays. And he got the final out of the year last year. And he's somebody who I think is a chip on his shoulder, and even went back out to the bullpen last night after he was done pitching to get some extra work, which typically is only a spring training thing. But he did that last night, which was cool to see. And I feel good about Walker Buehler heading into the postseason. I think he can take down some big outs for this baseball team. And another great move by Dave Dombrowski to be able to bring him in late in the season for, what, a veteran minimum, no risk at all. And he also can come out of the bullpen, I think, and give you some really quality innings here. So good stuff from Walker Buehler. And I think that even with Nola, you could think about piggybacking Walker Buehler or Taijuan off him. And I feel probably the least confident in Taijuan out of all of them. And I know he's had a good year, and I think that Taijuan has earned the right to maybe be on a postseason roster. But at the same time, I just, if I'm looking at pure stuff and confidence meter and what I have in them in a postseason scenario, probably my confidence ranking right now would go Buehler, Nola, Taijuan. So that is where I'm at with that, and that's where I'm at on the rotation. Just saw a number before I move on to the bullpen here. Phillies have 83 quality starts from their starting staff this year, with Boston being in second with 71. Like, what a job by this pitching staff this year. Just some unbelievable performances, and especially when you lose Zach Wheeler, for all these guys to be able to step up after and pitch some of their best baseball this season. Just really incredible stuff, and something that shouldn't go unnoticed as well. So want to get to some bullpen concerns slightly that I had before I get into these playoff scenarios here. Kirkering and David Robertson not pitching their best baseball this season. And with Kirkering, I've kind of given him the benefit of the doubt sometimes, just saying, you know, once he gets his fastball right, he'll be able to, you know, be much more effective. And I think with him, it's just something where if he is throwing the fastball where he wants to throw it, he's going to be able to get guys out. If he doesn't, he's not. And right now, he's not. And it's been probably a two-month stretch now of baseball where he just doesn't have the command that he did in the first half of the season. And for a guy like that who doesn't have his command, guys are just going to lay off that sweeper, and they're not going to swing. And I think that's where the command issues with him become more than a problem. It becomes something where, you know, he's just not going to be effective if he can't throw that fastball where he wants to throw it. So concerned about him a little bit for sure. David Robertson got off to the really good start and has been a little homer happy over the last few, over the last couple of weeks or so. Just hope that one of these guys can potentially emerge and become the righty to get to Duran. And I don't feel great about them going to the postseason. It's just going to be that bridge between the starter going six innings. So from the sixth inning to the eighth inning, how do you line it up? And I think that's something where it's not definitive yet for the Phillies, especially in terms of the right-handers on the roster right now. And Duran, I know he's had a couple of hiccups over the past couple of weeks or so. I'm not concerned about him. I just think he's sort of getting too cute 0-2 sometimes. He's given up two 0-2 homers over the past, you know, couple of weeks. The one to Pajes in L.A., where he hangs that pitch 0-2, just hangs a curveball that gets absolutely smoked out of Dodger Stadium. And then whoever that guy was on the Marlins, I actually don't even know who that is, just gives an 0-2 fastball right down the middle, and it gets smacked out of, you know, Citizens Bank Park there. I just think that he needs to be able to be a little more refined in his pitches when he's up 0-2, because I understand that you can beat them just purely with your stuff alone, but if guys are sitting on that fastball, or if they're sitting on that breaking ball down the middle, yeah, they're still major league hitters. They're going to be able to hit it. So those are my feelings of Duran. I still feel really confident about him going into the postseason, but I don't feel like it's automatic, per se, that it was right when he got here. So besides that, Matt Strom has gotten a lot of rest down the stretch. I think that's very intentional. I think they just want to sort of save those bullets for the postseason. Pitched a lot this year, as he typically does, so that's why I think they've been taking it easy on Strom. And that's why Tanner Banks has been taking down a lot of these innings, which I think he's going to take down some postseason innings as well as we get there. So want to get to this postseason outlook really quick. Just going into the weekend, things that, you know, are on the table for the National League and some for the American League as well, as we wrap up the season this weekend. So most things are set, including, you know, the buys in the NL. Phillies and Brewers have buys. Again, the Phillies would need to sweep out the Minnesota Twins this weekend, and the Brewers would have to do the same in their series. The Brewers are taking on the Reds this weekend, who are fighting for a postseason spot. So not out of the question, but again, would need to be something pretty miraculous. And the scenario for the sixth wild card right now, and the Phillies, as of, you know, this second, would be playing the winner of the 3-6 series. The Mets can get in if they hold their one-game lead this weekend, but a tiebreaker would go to the Reds. So the Mets just have to, if the Mets win 2 out of 3, the Reds just can't sweep. If the Mets win 1 out of 3, the Reds can't take 2 out of 3. So if the Reds win one more game than the Mets this weekend, they get in. And the Diamondbacks are 2 behind. They would need pretty much everything to go their way. The Reds hold the tiebreaker over them, too. So they would need to sweep, and the other two would, I think, have to get swept. Maybe the Mets could win 1 out of 3. So those are the scenarios for this weekend. It pretty much looked like the Mets control their own destiny heading into the weekend, which is the important thing to know. But the Reds holding those tiebreakers is a very important thing to keep in mind as well there. So last thing, I mean, this collapse out of the Detroit Tigers is insane. I mean, we talk about the Mets collapse this year. That doesn't even hold a candle to what the Detroit Tigers have gone through over the past month and a half or so. They, at one point this year, had a 15-game lead in the division. They, I think going into the month of September, had like a 12-game lead in the AL Central, and now it's tied heading into the final series with Cleveland holding the tiebreaker. Just absolutely insane stuff. And for a team like that, where they, you know, struggled for so long and eventually, you know, had the postseason run last year where they beat the Astros and they take on the Guardians and have some really good moments in that series, just, I mean, could be a potentially heartbreaking finish to the year. And they're still in play for a wild card there too, with Houston struggling out there. So it's going to be a very interesting weekend to watch with the Tigers, and we are witnessing potentially one of the greatest collapses of all time. So, and the only other matchup that's set right now in the National League is Cubs-Padres, who will take on likely the Brewers. The winner of that series will. So that is the series that is set for now. And so going to get into a little weekend preview before we get out of here. Just want to go over these matchups. And I know it won't be the most meaningful baseball, but hey, we are on Ryan Howard, record-breaking watch with Kyle Schwarber. So tonight you got Joe Ryan versus Aaron Nola. Hopefully Nola can get one good start under his belt, feel good heading into the postseason. Saturday you've got Ranger Suarez and Mick Abel, who was pitching for the Minnesota Twins, our good friend Mick Abel. Actually, has a 3.15 ERA since being traded to the Twins. So hasn't been great lately, but overall with his time with the Twins, hasn't been the worst of runs for McAble there. And then Sunday to wrap up the season, you've got Chris Sanchez, who hopefully can leave it on a good note, probably going to finish second in the Cy Young to Paul Skeens. Got him facing Simeon Woods Richardson in the final game of the year there. So for Phillies 24/7, appreciate you listening as always. And for Phillies Today, this has been Justin Morgenstein. Have a good one, everyone. I'll see you.